And you're listening to WMNF Tampa. WMNF, welcome to the afternoon. Let's put a smile on our faces. There we go. It is. Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon. You are listening to WMNF, the best station in the nation. That was Best Coast with Only Place, one of my favorite songs, and I'm glad to share it with you. My name is Joellen Schulke. I am the hostess who loves you absolutely the mostest, and this show is called Art in Your Ear. Coming up in a few minutes, I believe that we will be talking to Matthew McGee, which has a show opening up at Freefall Theater, and he wrote it, he made it. It's going to be really interesting. It's a Florida Christmas show, so it should be very, very interesting. I want to let you know that support for WMNF comes from listeners like you, wonderful listeners like you, and Rhyming with Miss Ida, specializing in children's rhyming books such as Poor Old Goat, Sad Little Dog, and more. Details on Miss Ida's children's books are at Rhyming with Miss Ida. Well, you know what? I think we're going to rock out a little bit. How about that?
One. Bye.
You know, I couldn't help myself. I was going to play a cover of Sweet's Ballroom Blitz, but then I decided, oh, no. We just have to play the original. It was just too juicy and delicious to avoid. So there we go. I want to let you know, just remind you that, and we're going to hear a little promo for this, but the Ukulele Fest is tonight at New World Brewery. Have you been to New World Brewery, to the new New World Brewery? It's fantastic. That starts at 7. It's located at 810 Skagway Avenue in Tampa. Tomorrow, is the OG Uke It Out Festival at Cage Brewing, and that's located at 2001 First Avenue South in beautiful downtown St. Pete. And that starts at 4 p.m. and goes until 10. Tickets are available in advance for $17 per day, $20 day of the show. Kids 12 and under are free. There's 12 ukulele acts. There's a Beatles and Tom Petty open jams. There's Muddy Water and the ukulele contest. You can bring your ukulele and jam with everybody. I hope to see you there. It's going to be really great. Go online to WMNF.org to get tickets. All right, so we're going to listen to some ukulele. Take On Me from Annie B. Sweet.
if I'm a garbage can.
Okay, I'm having some problems here. Let's try this one. Come on. Come on. There we go. This is for Brett and his son, who are in Almost Maine in a play opening tonight.
Thank you.
Such a sweet song, and sending it out to Brett and his son, and good luck. Break a leg for your show tonight. Speaking of show tonight, I've got Matthew McGee on the phone. Hello.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm fine. Are you safe? Do you have your seatbelt on?
I am. I'm doing great. I'm just making my regular commute from Seminole Heights to St. Petersburg.
There we go.
It's every day.
So, Matthew, you did everything the night before. Can you tell the listeners a little bit, like, I want to write a Christmas show, or I want to write this? How did this get started?
Oh, absolutely. You know, at Freefall Theater over the years, and I think every theater company faces this, the professional theater company says, what do we do for the holidays? And for many years, Freefall did a Christmas Carol, so much acclaim, and people really loved that. But our artistic director, Eric Davis, wanted to shake things up, so he put Peter Pan in the schedule and Peter and the Starcatcher, The Lion in Winter, Little Prince. He wanted to try some different types of things. And one year, we did sort of a Christmas mashup show that the critics hated but was really packed, so the audiences loved it. And we kind of laughed about that, and I remember sort of remarking to Eric, I said, wow, you know, I could write a Christmas show probably better than this one. And he laughed and said, okay, well, then why don't you do it? And that's exactly where it got started. And as we were coming up to getting back into the space, Eric said, how about this Christmas show that you brought up a couple years ago? And suddenly I was like, okay. And we sat down, Eric Davis and I came up with the idea of it being a holiday party, a wacky holiday party that the audience is invited to where anything can happen. And I told him I really wanted it to feel like an Andy Williams Christmas special meets Pee Wee's Playhouse. And so that's kind of what it is. I got together with Michael Raby, who's a great musical director and arranger and singer, piano player. And we created, a score with Christmas carols and some original songs. And tonight we have our first preview for a live audience. And so it's, what an exciting and quick process.
Right. It's quick being like, whoa. So it's a party. And I love, of course, the wholesomeness meeting Pee-wee's. And Pee-wee's Playhouse was wholesome in its own special way, but also just everything was a bit twisted. And I think that listeners and people locally who are aware of your work and your art is that you do drama roles very well. You do comedy and musical roles very well. And people know you a lot of times for your drag performances too. So I think people are going to be wondering, what are we going to get here in this? Is it... can you talk a little bit, is there something happens at the party that...
Exactly. So the party's set in Florida, but due to climate change and unseasonably cold weather, it starts to snow. So they're snowed in their apartment building, and they have to make the best of it. And that's part of some of the comedy of it, that it snows in Florida, which, that'll be the day, but you never know. And it's kind of a 75-minute... it's a comedy, it's a musical comedy, but it's also sort of like a little slice of life moment of what would you do if you were stuck with four friends in an apartment building in Florida when it suddenly there was a blizzard and you're celebrating the holidays.
Right.
And that's really what it comes from.
I'd be putting some brandy in that eggnog.
Oh, you better believe it. Oh, they do. They even make they sing Mele Kalikimaka and make the Blue Hawaiian right on stage. It's really funny. Growing up, Pee Wee Herman and Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, were like my heroes. And I think people who know me can see a lot of that really did, as a kid, inspire me to do a lot of different things. So I have a lot of homage to, Pee Wee and other kind of fantastic, silly, over-the-top characters. I love, of course, the Pee Wee Herman Christmas special because, he goes ice skating with Little Richard. This is where my brain was for the show.
So were there some, it sounds like, were there any tropes? Like, were there any bridges too far? Like, you could say, I cannot do that. That is the bridge too far.
Eric is very funny, to rein it in. I mean, one of the things I really wanted to happen was that there's a younger character in the show. He's a bit of a hipster. And then there's an older lady in the show who's a cat lady and next door neighbor. They both bring brownies, but his brownies have an extra kick. And they get switched. And the older lady eats two or three, what we call on the show, magic brownies, and hilarity ensues.
Is any of this based on real life?
Some of it. Some of it. It is actually, and it's a very funny story. And I know Eric will probably kill me when he hears this, but Eric's mother once accidentally ate some, as we call them in the show, magic brownies, not knowing. And she had a bit of an interesting spell. And so we kind of worked that into the show.
You know, when my mom was dealing with cancer, the first time I was making her marijuana marinara to help her appetite. And there was a evening when the entire family ate it, not just her. Hilarity ensued.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. You know, even Eric said, so we're doing a holiday show for families, but there are pot brownies. So we call them magic brownies, just like Pee Wee would have done it on his show, you know.
So, you know, now obviously you've written before. This isn't the first thing you've written, but is this the first sort of straightforward, this is a play that you've written?
Sure. I've written cabarets and the Scott and Patty show, and I've written some plays, you know, in all my off time. I tend to be more of a comedy writer, a gag writer, if that makes any sense. I like to really write material more so than plays. So it's nice to have Eric, who has written plays and directed plays at Freefall, sort of be there through the process to guide me into how it dramatically works.
So it seems that, you know, because I love to write, but I certainly don't write any fiction, because while I think I can do dialogue and character and scenes, I don't know how to do plot. So will you just talk a little bit, because, you know, you're saying you like to write these different things, but doing a straightforward, how did the plot develop? Like, how as a writer did you do that?
Well, right. You know, it was so interesting. That was what I was worried about the most, I think. And Michael Raby wrote a song for the show called The Night Before. The idea is that these four friends can only get together the night before Christmas on December 23rd because their schedules are packed. And so the song really informed it. And then I thought of the snow in Florida, and we went from there. And I actually found the plot developing quite easily and quite naturally. You know, as a writer yourself, Joellen, that doesn't always happen. So there was a bit of, I think, I dare I even say kismet about it. It really fell into place fairly easy, the plot. And then, you know, the biggest, hardest part was finding the songs and writing the songs and taking, like, you know, classic, you know, public domain Christmas carols and rearranging those to work in the show. So we found that structure may be a little bit harder, kind of trying to make it a musical. But the plot fell into place fairly easy, which I was really happy about.
That's so interesting. And then when you were writing the characters, did you have specific people in mind that you wanted to cast?
You know, I did. When we did Marie and Rosetta, one of the wonderful ladies that were in that, who played Marie, we did that great musical, the two-woman musical about the life of Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Yeah, that was a stunning show. I want to mention that. Great show.
And the young woman who played Marie Knight, Hilary Scales Lewis, I really knew I wanted her to come back and be in the show because of her presence, and she could play instruments. And I knew that was important to the show. And then I wrote the role of Phyllis Schatz, the cat lady next door, for my good friend Sarah DelVito, who is kind of like a, you know, she's a great singer, but she's also got this great Melissa McCarthy kind of comedian vibe. Like, she's sort of unafraid to go wherever. And then Michael Raby is sort of the anchor of the show. You know, it's supposedly his apartment, his fictionalized apartment. And I knew I wanted him, but we had a hard time finding the younger gentleman in the show to play sort of the hipster guy who plays bass guitar, ukulele, rhythm guitar, and all these other different instruments. Because one of the most interesting things we had to also keep in place is, with COVID restrictions and COVID rules from Actors Equity Association, we test the actors 3 times a week. So the smaller you can make the cast, the easier it is to control that sort of bubble that they're in.
Right.
So
right,
I knew I wanted them to not only be funny, but to play instruments. And then I needed a few other characters in the show. So the actors jump on puppets. And there's a puppet cat named Stephen Sondheim. And there are two other characters. One of them is a Tinder date. And her name is Hipster Lover 29. We only learn her screen name. And then the other character is Mr. Acidopoulos. He's the building superintendent. And he's a bit of a conservative wingnut. So there's a lot of fun back and forth between Michael and this conspiracy theory blabbing character who ultimately kind of becomes lovable at the end. I did want there to be sort of a message at the end that maybe you don't always agree, but maybe around the holidays you can find some sort of common ground. And I think that means a lot for people and families now that they're finally maybe able to go be with each other again. You're not going to agree with everybody, but maybe you can find something that'll bring you together at the holidays. And that's a big part of the script, too.
Now, can I ask you, was the cat named Stephen Sondheim all the way through?
The whole time. And we had to rewrite a bunch of stuff because we had a bunch of bits about, well, how old is Stephen Sondheim now? And they said 91, and then how old is that in cat years? We had all this cute dialogue. And then he passed away.
I know.
So now it's a real tribute. So we have put a framed picture of Sondheim on the piano.
Aww.
It's a little bit of an Easter egg for the audience. We still call the cat Stephen Sondheim. And Michael has little glimpses of Sondheim-esque references because of the cat name. And so we really just kind of shaped it into more of a tribute than actual comedic material about Sondheim.
Right.
And I remember we were all told, we were in rehearsal that evening. And I mean, it was pretty devastating for all of us because I think we were all theater kids that grew up with Sondheim and he meant so much to us. So it was really, really kind of a sad night. Like I almost wanted to send everybody home early.
Right.
It was so sad. But we actually sat there and said, okay, so how do we now make this a tribute to him? And I think we've done a beautiful job doing that. There are little Sondheim references throughout the show, which are real love letters to a great composer that, you know, so many of us in the theater world just worship.
There was for a side note, there was, I think actually more than one, but I saw one where just everybody who's in a show on Broadway came to Times Square and sang Stephen Sondheim. And I was sort of like, usually when famous people die, I feel like, oh, you know, what a loss, but it's not a personal emotion. But then I started realizing that all the musicals that I just cherish are Stephen Sondheim musicals. And
you know, exactly. I mean, you know, we didn't see Eric Davis that night. You know, he's not at every rehearsal because he's not directing it. He just kind of comes in when we do runs. And I kind of thought, I hope Eric is okay tonight. And Eric told me something so poignant. He said, so much of what Freefall Theater is was dreamed up by him as a kid listening to Stephen Sondheim Broadway cast recording. Oh. That really touched me. You know,
right.
It really meant so much to him. So, yeah, you know, and I think you can see more, you know, we're going to do more Sondheim at Freefall as time goes on, because I know Eric really has always wanted to do every one of his musicals. So we'll see if we can make that happen.
Well, I want to remind listeners, we're chatting with Matthew McKee. He's on his way to rehearsals for The Night Before. It's a show written and directed by Matthew and opens with previews tonight, which is pretty darn tootin' exciting. I want to just sort of go back to Stephen Sondheim for a minute and the idea of theater kids. You know, certainly a show like Company that I saw when I was in high school, and I think we did it in high school, did not have the resonance that it does now.
Oh, wow.
as a more experienced adult, and then the wisdom in that, as having this gathering of theater kids, is there kind of a language that you know that you all can speak with each other? That, I mean, it always seemed to me that there was a theater kid language separate from English.
Oh sure, and things we laugh at and think are funny, and people are listening to us baffled sometimes. Absolutely. Oh, God, yes.
So, now, have you been, have you directed a show at Freefall before?
No, you know, never. I've always been so busy handling a lot of the marketing and social media for the company and, you know, and occasionally being on stage there, you know, here and there. And so it never really presented itself. But once I presented the script to Eric, he really thought it would be good for me to direct, too, because he felt like I had a real good sense of what it is. And I do like to direct comedy. That is fun for me.
What were some of the things that you found in directing? Like, with the writer, you're the writer and the director. Were there things as a director that you're kind of like, I might have to change this as, you know, I might need to tell the writer to change this? Or as a writer, were you like, what's up with that director?
Right. And it was so easy for me to change it because I was the writer, too, and there was no discussions, really, except with, you know, Michael Raby, you know, who I'm collaborating with as the musical director. But, yeah, I found it a little bit easier, but I also found myself, as a writer, sort of married to material that I don't think worked for everybody. So as we've run it, we've learned about things we can pull and cut. And I think we'll learn a lot tonight about what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm, right.
We'll maybe make other adjustments to the piece. But I think it's in good shape. One of the things I'm real happy about, Joellen, is it's weird. You know, when we do, those of us in the entertainment industry, performing arts, this is from the Straz, you know, to all over, we're always performing for people during the holidays. You don't really get to have a holiday very often.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, work-life balance was something, as the pandemic hit, that people started to really consider. And I just have been real happy that everyone working on this show has been enjoying themselves, laughing, smiling, having a great time, feeling free to ask questions and we'll ask for changes and to collaborate. And I said, you know, I feel really ready for the holidays. And I think people who come to it, that kind of fun and passion and it comes off the stage onto the audience, of course.
I think, too, there's the idea of restructuring what is the a holiday show. I mean, I don't have kids. I have godkids. And I have, you know, but I don't have close family left alive. I have friends, right. You know, and so what the traditional view of the holidays in you know, popular media is not a view that I have. And then the rest of it is like either sad person alone or, you know, a guy and, you know, people hooking up, whatever. I spend the holidays with my friends. And the idea of seeing a show about friendship during the holidays, you know, and I know it's a comedy and I know it's fun, but friendship during the holidays is something that I don't think is very well explored in popular culture.
You know, and it's so funny, for as much of it is as a comedy, at the end, they all sort of agree that they wouldn't have been able to get through the time they've been through recently without one another. And that it gets me every night, because like you, my friends are my closest chosen family. You know, I have a great family too, but you know, with my friends over the years, just by the nature of what we do in theater, that we're never able to really go home for the holidays because we're always busy doing something. Friends become this great family you choose. And I think that's really the message behind the show too. And there's a lot of warmth in it. And I think that's great. Even these wacky characters, but you know, that's why we've always loved, I mean, I know people can say whatever they want to about Paul Reubens, the man, and whatever his controversies and what have you have been, but Pee Wee Herman had a lot of warmth. For all the silliness, you rooted for Pee Wee, and you felt like you were part of his group of misfits. And I think that spoke to me as a young kid, and I think it really, it shows in this show, you know?
And that's also, the other thing is that, you know, I think a lot, I've been thinking a lot lately about kindness, and being kind even when I don't feel like it, or being kind when maybe the person doesn't necessarily merit kindness, but perhaps it is the best thing for the situation. So I like hearing I like hearing that about your show. I'm wondering, Matthew, has this opened something else up for you, like the idea of writing and directing, what are you thinking?
That playwright Natalie Simons, of course, and she's also just written a novel called Wise and Bone, and I did People Downstairs with her. She and I are talking about teaming up and writing sort of a horror comedy, a farce about middle-aged women going out to a cabin to hang out, drink wine, and celebrate a divorce when an escaped convict is out on the loose, and it's just a bit of a mistaken identity comedy, and it could be a real hoot. So Natalie and I are teaming up to start writing that after the new year. So we'll see how that goes. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think in terms of theater now, some of the classics, I think there's always room for classic productions, but I think there's a real hunger for people to see themselves on stage and to see different people. We never feel like there's a ton of plays written about middle-aged women. Do you know what I'm saying? And so we want to kind of have a fun comedy about what it's like, you know, and then have this sort of horror comedy element to it. So we are going to be working on that. And I'm excited to work with her because she's such a great writer.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. And now, so you're doing this, and then it opens, and you do some tweaks, and then you hit the road, right?
Yes, I head over to North Carolina. My good friend Scott Daniel, who I do the Scott and Patty show with, which is Tampa Bay's favorite mother and son cabaret, according to Creative Loathing. He has basically gotten a job where he runs the theater company in Highlands, North Carolina.
Nice.
In their community there. It's a really beautiful place, and we're doing Scott and Patty's holiday show there this year. So we're not in Florida this year, but we're in North Carolina. You know, we did a show for them a couple years ago, maybe 2019. They were scared to death to take Scott and Patty somewhere else besides the great people of Tampa Bay who sort of know us and love us. And you know, the opening number, the people were a little unsure of what they were seeing, and then when they got into it, they just ate it up. So the audiences there really were like, can we have a Scott and Patty show? So Scott and I write all the material for that, and it's a silly little show, and it's a lot of fun. So yeah, I go and do that up through the 19th of December, and then after that, I've got a very busy 2022 in Tampa Bay. I've got a lot of stuff coming up, a lot of different places.
That good. I'm glad. You know, and that's the thing that I think was concerning throughout the pandemic was that artists were going to need to sort of create a different way to have an income. And I was worried that people were not going to come back to their art and keep our area being such a rich, varied place of creation. So I'm glad to hear that there's busyness there.
I think it's been good, Joelle, and just for me personally, you know, I have a certain style of performing that I think it's this time. I feel like a USO performer sometimes. I feel like I'm out here to sort of spread joy and make people laugh. And so I have some fun stuff coming up. I'm going to play James Beard at Free Fall in a play called I Love to Eat. And then after that, I'm with Carla Hartley at Stageworks as Poirot in Murder on the Orient Express. So yeah, I've got a lot of things coming up this season. I'm at the Straz next summer as Reverend Mother in Nuns and Say Men. So they're trotting this old ham out, you know what I mean,
right,
to entertain people and get us through a weird time. And I'm thrilled.
Now, going back, I want to, if you don't mind, I'm going to make you put your other hat on and talk a little bit about Free Fall Theater. And what they just finished, or not, well, I guess they kind of just finished a couple weeks ago, finished Dames at Sea. They've got Fat Boy coming up next.
Yeah.
Fat Boy that's a pretty intense show.
It really is very intense. And, you know, Eric always wants to, you know, have some sort of voice of that, you know, that you're still doing some things that are a little more, you know, a little more daring, I would say. But yeah, I mean, these first two shows we say are the sorbet course, you know, and the appetizer. Dames at Sea went really well, and it's just a sweet little musical that we had a fun, diverse cast for us. You got to see people playing roles that you may have never seen, you know, get to play some of those parts, which we love. And then after that, you know, we have this really sweet Christmas show. So then things really amp up for the rest of the season. It's a great season with
Lady Day at Emerson Bar.
Emerson's Bar and Grill, and we're partnering with a theater in Sarasota called Urbanite on a play called A Skeptic and a Brewha, which is really fun. And then the last show of the season is called The Agitators, and it's about the friendship of Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass. So we have a lot of great stuff coming people's way. Also, we're doing a ton of extra programming, tandem series, cabarets, film screenings. I screened The Wrath of Khan last month, was really popular, and the audience can kind of we have a setup where they can kind of tweet, you know, like talk to me on a screen off
Wait,
the side of, you know.
Isn't that the movie where that thing crawls into Chekhov's ear?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Earworm, which had everyone in the theater that night, you know, and I was kind of amazed, Bill Ellen, to see how much people really love The Wrath of Khan and still remember so much of it.
But that
crowd screamed Khan, you know, with William Shatner, and it felt, I don't know, it's so really magical, you know, so a lot of new things at Free Fall. We're trying new stuff to keep audiences, you know. Eric said something interesting, we haven't had theater in a while, right,
mm-hmm.
traditional, and he said, and I really kind of want Free Fall to be a campfire and have everyone gather around again safely to hear and tell stories, and that's what we do.
You know, and that's as the pandemic started waning, the first theater I saw was, I went to a dress rehearsal of Shock-Headed Peter by Jobsite Theater, which was such an interesting and wonderful show.
I loved it.
And even though this was a dress rehearsal and there was just a handful of other people there, to be in the theater and experiencing theater again was, I mean, I just wanted to drink it up. Like, I was like, can I come back tomorrow and day after? Because being back in the theater, being in theater and being at concerts and stuff to experience art as a group is very different from watching something alone. You know, being in movie theater. Can I ask you, like, as throughout this or as things have started again back at Free Fall and other things, as a theater lover, are there things that you think, you know, maybe we should do this differently from what was done before? Like, now is a chance to sort of be fresher with how we think about theater. Has anything come up in those conversations?
Yeah, sure. You know, Eric kind of changed. You know, I still believe we are unexpected, daring, and authentic. That used to be our little tagline, but now it's simply escape a while. I think Eric said coming back, he wanted people to be able to escape, and not in the way that we would just be presenting fluff, but we would be taking audiences to different places and seeing different people and things you may have never seen before. He knew that was really important to what we were trying to do to come back. The only thing I can say that's different as a theater lover and as a theater artisan, I guess, dare I say, it's harder to do theater than it ever was. You know, there's a lot of COVID protocols and a lot of safety stuff, which is so super important, and we really take it seriously. But it, that just makes, you know, it's a hard business, and now it just makes the process a little harder, and it causes some delays. And it also, I feel like audiences are coming back, but they're not coming back like they were. I still think there are people who are still quite nervous, and we absolutely understand that. So we hope that this season, which is a little lighter maybe and a little more fantastic in a way, like, you know, you're going to all these different kind of places, meeting all these very interesting people. After that, we can kind of get back into the swing of some of our other more challenging programming. But as of right now, I think Eric really wants to make sure that you see at Free Fall some diversity on stage, but also some diverse stories from different writers and just things that you may have never seen before. You know, not your classic opening with Dames at Sea. That's about the last classic we do in the season. Do you know what I'm saying? It kind of started us off, and then the rest are fairly new plays and fairly current plays that I think will get people really excited.
And I very much appreciate that, you did the Sister Rosetta Tharp show, and then now what about Billie Holiday, and so that idea of looking at iconic Black women performers and iconic Black women artists to remind people that they have as much of a rightful place in how we think about our art in this country. I have deep appreciation for you guys doing that.
And we do too. We all love those, especially Billie Holiday, was somebody that meant so much to all of us at the office and when we were planning this season. And what's great about it is, what else is great is that it's not really a risk to do that stuff. I mean, no. What's great is audience really clamor for it. I mean, we sold out every single show of Marie and Rosetta, and Lady Day is already our top seller of the season.
Right, yeah. I bet. Well, all right. So we've got you. You're going to North Carolina to do the Mother and Son Christmas show. You have dress rehearsal. I mean, not dress rehearsal. You've got previews tonight and tomorrow night and Sunday. Is that correct? No.
No. We'll have a preview tonight and tomorrow afternoon at 2, and then official opening is Saturday night at 7 p.m. And now at Free Fall, all evening shows are 7. People have been asking for that for a while so they can get out of the blue. So we are doing that.
Right, That sounds like a lot easier. And so the show officially opens up tomorrow evening, and then it goes through the 24th. And it's really just dark always on Mondays, and then there's a couple of other days where it's playing a couple Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays and various that.
Yeah, and we have like a few special events here and there. In fact, while we were able to get Hillary here, we brought back Eliana, who played Sister Rosetta Tharp. So they also have a Christmas cabaret in our space coming up this month. The two ladies from Marie and Rosetta are returning.
Oh, that's great.
To do a Christmas show, and we love that.
Well, how much fun.
A lot of fun stuff happening.
Well, good. Well, Matthew, it's so wonderful to chat with you again. I'm so excited for you. I'm so happy that this happened for you and sort of put you in a new way. And I think that's wonderful. And I love to see that. So thank you so much for coming on. And I'm glad you didn't get into a car wreck because I was really nervous about that.
I just parked at Free Fall in beautiful West St. Pete, and I'm here. So it was a great way to pass the time.
Well, give everyone, all of my listeners, love at Free Fall Theater. It's a magical theater, and I'm thrilled for you. And dear listeners, all this information will be up on the Art in Your Ear Facebook page and the Art in Your Ear page on WMNF.org a little bit later this afternoon. Thank you so much, honey bunny.
Thank you, my dear.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
From a garbage can. the instrument from Hawaii, is now one of the hottest instruments in rock. Even Eddie Vedder plays the ukulele.
'Cause all my time is spent here, longing to belong to you.
Uke It Out, WMNF's 6th annual ukulele festival. There will be over a dozen ukulele performers, including Apple Butter Express Duo. You'll hear reggae, rock, blues, country, and more. Plus, there's a Beatles jam open to all ukulele players and a Muddy Waters of the Ukulele contest. WMNF's 6th annual ukulele festival Friday, December 3rd at New World Brewery in Tampa at 7. And Saturday, December 4th at Cage Brewing in St. Pete at 4. Tickets $17 advance, kids 12 and under free. Go to WMNF.org or 813-238-8001.
Proof of a negative COVID-19 test result taken within 72 hours before the show is required for entry. Or proof of full vaccination may be substituted for a negative COVID-19 test result.
I think Ballroom Blitz just keeps wanting to play no matter what I hit. That's so funny. We're going to listen to some L. Michaels' Affair with Uncut Gem in the background. Well, I let you know some stuff going on. As mentioned before, Jobsite Theater has Shockheaded Peter up, and tomorrow night is the last performance of that for this year, Shockheaded Peter at the Jobsite Theater. What an amazing tale. Just a visual, just insane carnival of, like, Edward Gorey creates a carnival. It's just fantastic. And that is at Jobsite Theater. You can go online to jobsitetheater.org. Also going on in the theater locally, playwright Bill Levengood has a new show called The Sister Mothers of Gulfport, and that opened up at the Studio Grand Central, home of the Off Central Players, and that show is going to be up for a little while. It's a interesting show about some women in Gulfport. So let's keep it without the sisters. The Sister Mothers of Gulfport opened last night and it runs through December 12th. And that again is at the, it's by the Off Central Players at Studio Grand Central. And that's located right there in beautiful downtown St. Petersburg. And that link will be up on our Facebook page and hopefully on our page on WMNF.org. I think that's it. We just have some music to play. I'm going to play you one more promo. And then we're out of here. I see E-Love in there. She's going to bring her beautiful, beautiful show to you. It is a sort of a spiritual and dance, electronica, global journey to making you feel good. That's basically it. After that, of course, is Live Music Showcase, and they are setting up in the studio. Going to have a great band in there. That's followed at 3:00 by Reverend Billy and Marvelous Marvin, and they bring you all sorts of roots, rock, country, gospel, novelty music all over the place. You never know truly what is going to be played next on that, or even said on that show. It's really fun. And then up to 6:00, we've got classic R&B and soul coming from the Soul Party with Steve the Hitman. We move on then to the fantastic Da Soul Kitchen. Resident chef Eddie G and his sous chef David B play a lot of R&B, soul. They've got some hip-hop in there, some rock music, and then stuff you will never expect to hear and are delighted when you do. We finish up our Friday nights with Flashback Friday with Chuck Cord Jr., and that's a lot of Florida soul and stuff like that. So thanks for being part here of WMNF. Thank you for being part of everything. We're going to go out with some Rebecca Pulley. This is her song, I Love the Clouds. You have been listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF, the best station in the nation. My name is Joellen Schilke. I am the hostess who absolutely loves you the mostest. This show is art in your ear. You can always get in touch, Joellen, Joellen, at WMNF.org. Thanks again, everybody. I heart you big time and talk to you next week.
I love the clouds more than you, honey. I love the clouds more than you. They drift in and stagger and they walk away slow. But they don't break my heart when they go. You love the chase more than me, honey. You love the chase more than me. city lights didn't wait.